WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshall guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD as we start off the talk block here on 95.9 WATD. My name is Kevin Tachi. The rumors are true. And we hope to better inform you for the next 1 hour and 45 minutes. We're hoping to start off the show after traffic with a candidate running for state representative. This particular candidate, Fred Fontaine. Fred so happens to be someone who is a local business owner in the city of Brockton, and I believe that he's the deputy director of the Emergency Management Agency for the city of Brockton. He is a candidate for the 11th Plymouth District State Representative seat. Now, as we have shared information with you, in the past few weeks, that Claire Cronin, picked by President Biden to be the ambassador to Ireland. I believe that she was recently sworn in the House. So now she is going to head off to Ireland. Now, I don't know if there's going to be any kind of special election to fill her seat for the remaining until the end of the legislative session. But I know that there are a slew of candidates who are running for this seat. So we look forward to that. Those candidates, as we have already reached out, not only to one, Fred, who's going to be here tonight to tell us why he is running for the seat, but there are a few other candidates. So stay tuned for that. State Representative Steve Exaros will be joining us. We'll chat with him about Nero's bill. Last week, the House passed Nero's bill. Belief is it'll move along to the state Senate. See what happens from there. We'll speak with the representative about that particular bill. Very passionate about the bill. And we'll also talk with him about, I guess, a new mantle he's going to look to pick up and help push along a bill that Governor, the Baker administration has put forth in regards to some of the changes that are being sought when it comes to domestic violence, comprehensive new protections to help the survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, and assault and battery. So we'll speak with the representative about that. We might even tease the idea that, you know, up next is a House Budget 2. It's where the House of Representatives will put their budget. That's just down the road a couple of weeks away. We'll chat with him about that and even see if he has any thoughts on the governor releasing his budget a couple of weeks ago. Hour number two, we'll have a friend, Jared Valenzuela, Plymouth County Commissioner, also host on this very station every Wednesday night, host of the JV team. We'll chat with him along with Cosmos Macero. Cosmo is a media consultant with Seven Letter and the co-host of OA On Air, the podcast, as well as good friend, Dave Wedge, best-selling author who co-wrote 12, the inside story of Tom Brady's fight for redemption. Well, fun enough, we're going to talk about Tom Brady stepping aside, deciding to retire. If you remember, last Monday night, we had a group of folks who were in here, and we talked about, is he going to retire? Well, he did. And he did it with fanfare, and some folks here in New England are not happy with how Tom went about it. We'll talk with Dave, Cosmo, and Jared and get their take on it. And then finally, we're going to speak with Ann Jones Vogt. She is the author of Wake Up and Live. We'll get to the story as to how she put together this self-help book, as she was someone who was going through a divorce, somebody who had two children, somebody who was battling with weight loss, and one day decided that enough was enough, that she was going to put her life in order. And as she did it, she actually put together a best-selling book, best-selling on Amazon as of this week. So we'll get her take on this particular book, as we like to feature authors. It's great to talk to folks who have worked hard and put together their own thoughts and want to share with other people. So we are looking forward to that. And I believe in a couple of moments we will find out what's happening out on the roadways. Just a quick note, if you have missed any of our radio shows, or if you've missed any of the segments, all of the podcasts are indeed up. They are available. If you go to the homepage of 959 WATD and check out the podcast, most of the radio programs here on WATD try to find ways to share what we broadcast. So we look forward to that coming up in just a few moments. So
I am so stressed out. The school, home, bills, government, economy, gas prices, vaccines. It is so hard to get anything done and so stressful. We are all stretched to the max with no end in sight. We're all saying the same thing to one another. This is crazy. I'm not the bringer of bad news. I bring good news. And the good news is we're all in this together. And I actually find comfort in that. So let's all take these stress-relieving, mindful breaths together. Don't change the channel. Shh. Take a breath. I'm inhaling. I'm exhaling. Brennan Smoke Shop. Have a great day.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right. We await the arrival of our first guest. He is pulling into the parking lot. Candidate running for state representative, Fred Fontaine. As I said, he is going to be our first guest and the first of many who are running for this particular seat. It is that time of year when you think about state elections, knowing that there are going to be many folks who are going to be out and about. This past weekend were the Democrats caucusing. Very interesting. Not sure if you had a chance to, if you are somebody who's politically involved, knowing that Democrats were out and about, not only here in our backyard, Duxbury, but Middleborough and many other places in and around the Commonwealth of Mass. As we know, Governor Charlie Baker is not seeking re-election. So many candidates who are running for governor, I believe that Maura Healey was out and about, Danielle Allen was out and about. Might want to give a quick programming note that we are expecting to hear from Danielle Allen on next week's radio program to get her take on running for governor. We've already had one gubernatorial candidate who joined us not too long ago in Jeff Deal. We've had different candidates who are running for state senate. We had Gary Innes, who joined us last week talking about his campaign. Definitely an exciting time of year. to have candidates who want to come in and talk about why they're running for office, being a part of the democratic process. Democratic process is definitely, it's fantastic. And getting involved with folks who want to somehow make a difference, whether you believe in their message and their word. So tap Larry. Larry, if you jump on the microphone just for a moment.
I'm not running for office, so.
Are you sure?
Well, I'm running from office, but I'd like to.
You know, over the years, we've had many different folks who are running for office, whether it's someone who's appeared on this radio program, somebody who's been a part of news, you know, been on the news. I mean, with some of the memorable people that we've had in this radio station over the years.
God, there's been so many for the last 30 years that I've been involved in the radio station, from Jim Cantwell, who now works for Senator Markey.
I think he spoke this week. He
started out as my camp counselor, and he became a selectman in the town of Marshfield, and then worked his way up, and he's working, doing great things with Senator Markey's office, which is wonderful. I'm trying to think, Ned Kirby, way back.
Oh, yeah.
I think he lived in Whitman, yeah. Great guy.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun with him over the years. I did, Perry and I a few times met Senator Edward Kennedy at a few different events. And it was interesting. Ed met his dog at some one of the events that was up at Massasoit, one of the beautiful dogs that he had.
You talk about Kennedy.
Kennedy, Ted Kennedy.
Yeah, I actually was there when...
Were you with us that day?
Yeah. I was there that day and was interested to see...
Water Doodle, I think that's the type of dog it was?
Yep, and it was interesting to see. Ed was... You know, Ed's one of those guys who, as a reporter, he's no fear.
Well, Ed and I got off a train once, and there was Michael Dukakis, and we interviewed him talking about trains. Rode around Plymouth with... Governor Weld, I think it was. And was at an opening of the Plymouth Public Library with Lieutenant Governor Paul Cellucci, who became governor.
Sure.
And, of course, many times in here, the present governor has been here before he was governor on this show with Bob Headland. So met a few interesting politicians. And I've met a few across the country, too. I remember interviewing one about a bill that was called the music bill for royalties and stuff and credits to go back to the actual people who sang the songs and wrote the songs, and he couldn't remember the name of his bill. That was pretty interesting. That was out in the Midwest somewhere.
Well, again, knowing that there's an open seat for governor will definitely be interesting, knowing that it's been some time since an attorney general.
Well, we have a lot of candidates, too.
Yes.
From now, it looks like we've got maybe two Republican candidates, I think, and we've got at least four Democrats, and I think they're all women, which is great. And Maura Healey, who's been on the TV for all these years, she's got that. A lot of people know about her and how she's been fighting for people and their rights and stuff, consumer rights and things like that. I think she's got a real good chance.
Well, it's kind of a team effort going on here. As again, we're waiting for Fred Fontaine, who is a candidate for state representative.
At which district?
I believe it's the 11th Plymouth District. Mm. This is going to be a reconstituted redistricting.
They did a big redistricting in there, too, yeah.
So it's going to be definitely interesting to see what ends up happening, how that district will change. And again, there are so many different candidates that are who have already thrown their hat into the ring.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely very, very interesting.
It will be interesting. All these years now, it's been pretty interesting what's been going on with the politics and stuff. Wait and see who gets in with this round, and we continue to look forward to the next presidential election too, and see what's going to happen there. Who's going to be there? I know Joe Biden's already said he's going to be there. He's planning on it.
Why don't we do this? Let's take ourselves a quick break and collect ourselves. Hopefully our guest is going to be coming in.
Yeah.
And when we come back in a moment, more Monday Night Talk.
This is is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Are you worried about your drinking?
Or is someone else worried about your drinking?
Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
There is no shame in living with a disease called alcoholism.
Regardless of your age, employment, or any other circumstances in your life, you deserve help from other individuals who understand what you are going through. Alcoholics Anonymous is here for you 24/7 at AA.org. Find online meetings at AAboston.org.
Hey, it's John Shea here from Almost Famous Radio, introducing you to independent bands and musicians from across New England. Brought to you each week by Tiny and Sons Glass. Tomorrow night, another full show in store for you. Tons of new music, upcoming events to let you know about. And our Tiny stage guest will be singer-songwriter Matt York. That's tomorrow, 8 till 10, for Almost Famous, 95.9 WATD and 95.9WATD.com.
Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Okay, we return and we have the search party was successful in finding our guest. Mr. Fred Fontaine is here with us. Fred, how are you?
Very good, Kevin. I've been a long time. I see you, my man.
It's good to see you. For folks who don't know, tell us a little bit about yourself. I teased the idea that you are a Brockton business owner.
This is definitely yes.
Okay, and you are also somebody who is the deputy director of the emergency management agency, BEMA,
yes.
Right?
Yes, that's correct.
So, you're running for office.
Yes, of course I'm running for office. You remember 2009, I did run, you know, that was for... we're back anyway, so you know that story. So let me go back straight up since we're running late. Let me tell you again, you know, I'm a business guy in Brockton for the past 20 years. And I'm also been very involved in this community for quite some time. So, you know, Pleasant Street, you know, basically I got to explain to those folks here who's listening. This is a brand new district that just been open since they redistrict the zone. So it's going to be Ward 7, we have 4 precincts. We also have Ward 2, which is 4 precincts. Mm-hmm. And we also have Ward 3, we get 2 precincts. Ward 1, 1 precinct. So basically this is where my business is, and this is also my ward. And I've been struggling a lot on this part there. You know Pleasant Street, basically.
I do, yeah.
And Pleasant Street was not pleasant at all in Brockton. So... myself, I spent quite some time and really revamped that part of Brockton, Pleasant okay. Street, you know, all those was bad. So when I realized that new district, that opening for that new district, I said, listen, I think that's a time maybe if I put myself into those folks' shoes, you know, shoes who want to change Brockton, maybe I think I could do better than what I'm doing right now. So we did a lot of things to change this part of the city, and there's a lot more to do.
Okay, so are you looking to fill out the remainder of the term? Are you looking to run for an entire legislative session? Are you looking to, you know, be, hopefully, you're somebody who makes it through the primary in September, and you're successful in November. Is that what you're looking to do, is to be elected for the start of January of 2023, or are you looking to... What's going to happen with the remainder of Claire Cronin's term? Has anybody given the details on that yet?
Well, that's exactly... I give you a part of it, because Claire, mm-hmm. you know, like you know, she's been elected to be the ambassador of Ireland, right?
Yep.
So now, this was with district. So basically, a part of it will be the new district that we are getting in. And Michel Dubois will take a part of it as well. And also we have... Jerry Cassidy, which will split it up. So that part of Clare will be divided under three, but Brockton will get his own. First time Brockton will get his own, you know, district himself, the 11th district. So which, this is the grand opening for everybody, which I feel like I'm very comfortable and very helpful to do it for everybody to really help this part of the city.
Okay,
it's
so
been neglected.
Okay, so you're running for office. So, all right, what are some of the issues? What are some of the issues? What are voters saying to you? They feel are issues that you should tackle.
All right. First of all, that's going to be my platform. Right. This is going to be like a safety. There's no safety that much, and that. In Boston, sometimes people complain there's a lot of safety issue. We get infrastructure, you know, like you could see. Infrastructure, that's a big part of Brockton, because we have to bring some money into Brockton to really help, you know, fix certain things was not done, or maybe it's been there for too long. Lighting, all that. We get also education. So education is a part very much that we want to keep, bring more money here into Brockton to help those young kids, not only kids, adults as well, because we do have a lot of foreigners, you know, who need help, and helping them understand the system so Brockton could be moving forward in a positive way, because we do need this kind of situation to help them out, you know.
Okay. So what are you offering for constituents' services? Are you looking to help folks in the district, or are you hoping to help people who are new to the country?
No. You got to understand that. Everybody who live in Brockton is a part of Brockton. We don't mind about you just came or you've been there. If Brockton succeed, everybody succeed. You got to try to develop Brockton in general. Bring the money to the city, and the mayor, the city councilors of Brockton could really, because I cannot do much for myself, because if I bring the money into Brockton, and then I will tell them exactly that money going to be for this reason, so they're going to have to work it out themselves to make sure this part is, they work it out themselves, like roads, all this, you know.
So you say roads, I think of local aid. So are you
going
to be the king of local aid? Are you going to be somebody who's going to champion education?
Yes.
What are you and don't forget, you're part of a legislative delegation, so it's not just you.
Exactly.
But you get Jerry Cassidy, who's the state representative. You've got, you mentioned Michelle Dubois, and then you've got State Senator Mike Brady. I mean, where do you feel you would fit in to be able to work as part of the legislative delegation for Brockton?
Okay. Me, Michelle Dubois, Jerry Cassidy, all those folks, they are my friend for a long time, and we've been discussing a lot about what Brockton need. So basically, when we talk to your constituent, they tell you, even though myself, I know, because I've been struggling myself on this part of the city. So if we bring something together to bring it to this part of the city, I think that's going to be more successful to make it happen, to bring it to Brockton. So basically, we get good relation between Jerry, Michelle Dubois, and also Mike Brady, which is a longtime friend as well. So we'll be able to make things happen, because, you know, I'm a friend of everybody. On the same time, I talk straight. You know, I'm not going to tell you stories that I cannot do. I'll do exactly what I think is possible to be done. I think that's a fact of it.
Okay. What do you feel is going to be the biggest challenge in running for state office? This is your first time running for state office, right?
Definitely, yes.
What's going to be your biggest challenge?
Well, since it's going to be something new, but I'm lucky, basically, I have, you know, all those guys who's already there, Jerry, Mike, who've been as well as state rep, and which is a good friend. I could also get some advice from them and see how's that gonna work, you know. But you have to follow the lead a little bit of people who've been there, because you cannot just get in so without knowing what's going on. But I'm pretty much learning fast. I learn very fast, so okay. I will catch up with the time.
Now, what happens with an open seat, there's usually, it's not just gonna be Fred Fontaine.
No, of course not.
But there's gonna be probably, I'm guessing, four or five other folks who are going to be running as well, and they're gonna have a platform. What sets you apart from all the others? Because I know there's a couple of city councilors that are already throwing their hat in the ring. What's going to set Fred Fontaine, what will make you stand out further than anybody else?
All right, that's a very good question. You know, basically, let me tell you why I'll be very different. I've been living in Brooklyn for the past 22 years. So realize that all those kids, their parents, they know me. They know me very well. Some of them I drive to school. Those kids now is growing up. They get kids themselves.
Yep.
And time to time, I myself advise them as to do the best for Brockton. And I will encourage them to stay, because, you know, we do have a lot of kids who's living in Brockton. They don't want to stay in Brockton. If I succeed myself, they could follow my lead. And we do speak different languages. Myself, I speak three languages.
Do you really?
Of course.
So you speak Haitian?
I speak Haitian, French, Creole, you know, a little bit of Spanish, and of course, English.
Wow.
Yes. Well, I could say four, but, you know, say three.
Very nice.
So there's going to be a big difference. And those folks are comfortable talking to me anytime because, you know, I've been open for the past 20 years, working in the city as a volunteer and also as a businessman. Most of those kids work in my place, you know, when I used to have my laundromat.
Yep.
They work at my place. Now they're growing up. They come to my barbershop sometime. They cut their hair. And I do like, it become like a family thing in a way if they respect me and I respect them as well. So you need those kind of relationship with your constituent, you know, to really help them out.
But are you ready to campaign during a pandemic? I mean, has it already been interesting to, you to be around with a mask and, you know, you got to keep your distance? I mean, are you ready for that experience to campaign during a pandemic?
Definitely, you know, because this is very important for me. Because, you know, like I said to you, I've been on the street, and, you know, I will take all my precaution for me and for whoever I'm going to meet. You know, we'll keep our distance. You know, if I have to do something like over the phone with them, you know, I'll set up an appointment. They could call me. I'll be free to sit down with them far away and make a phone call. You know, they will tell me all those questions, maybe more than what you're asking me. And I'll be frank with them. I will tell them exactly the way it is. Like I said, I will tell them the way it is. I will not try to, you know, give you some stories like it could not happen. You know, I'm not that kind of guy because there's more to be done in Brockton. And again, I'm a businessman. I'm still have a lot of business in Brockton. I do need Brockton to be like the other side of other cities. Like, I used to live in Cambridge, right? So Cambridge, look at Cambridge now. And I travel a lot in other countries. I see all this, everybody succeeding. Because you have to get to mind to see other countries the way they are moving forward and why Brockton is like always behind. So we need people like me. There's other people as well as me, but I could plead for myself. I see people like me who see things, who always think positive, and also encourage those young people when I'm no longer there to take my position and do the right thing for Brockton, because Brockton need to move forward, not sit down and waiting, and everybody's taking advantage. Nobody wants to live in Brockton. Why? Because we don't have the leadership that we need to bring the money, the resources to help them out.
And you're hoping to bring that leadership at being a state representative in the 11th Plymouth District?
Definitely, Kevin. I will do that.
Okay. Last piece of information. Folks want to find out more about you, your campaign, as you get it up and running. How can they do that?
Well, it's pretty much easy. I do have my phone, my cell phone. They could call for now because since paper is not out yet.
Yep.
And you could call me on my cell phone, 774-259-0096. And anytime they want to call me, again, I'll repeat it, 774-259-0096. People who want to join me in my campaign, who want to help me out, advise me, they are always welcome to come down, and we meet twice a week on Saturdays. So if they cannot meet with me, they could call me anytime. Again, 774-259-0096. Fred Fontaine.
Fred, thank you so much for joining us.
Kevin, that was a pleasure myself.
Sorry it took you a bit to get here, but at least you were able to get your message out.
I appreciate that. And maybe next time I come back again.
You got it. All right. We're going to step aside. Mm-hmm. And when we come back, we're going to speak with State Representative Steve Xaros here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Each year, about one out of two men and one out of three women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
That truck, it pays?
What?
The bumper sticker on that truck says it pays.
Pays? Pays what?
I can't quite read it. Oh, it pays to stay way back.
Ah, what was that?
The truck, snapback or rock. Now I've got a broken windshield.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. It pays to stay way back. However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINYS. And thank you.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we chug along. Joining us right now is our Representative Stephen Xaros. Representative, how are you, sir?
Great. Incredible day. How are you, Brother Kevin?
I am doing good. Last week when I heard the news about the House passing Nero's bill, you were one of the first ones that I thought of. And folks, yeah. For folks who may not know, and you've shared the story, if you give us an abridged version of the importance of Nero's bill and in it passing last week, at least the House, please feel free to share.
Absolutely. It's always bittersweet, but it's real. And that's how basically I got involved with politics. I was a police officer for 40 years in Yarmouth. On April 12, 2018, a team of Yarmouth, Barnstable, and state police officers left my office to go arrest a very violent career criminal with 125 prior crimes in Massachusetts. We had a tip that he might be in the house. We weren't sure. And they left the office around 12, and at around 3 on that day, that horrible day, I heard them screaming for help on the radio. And I was there with, about 100 other police officers and firefighters that came to help save them. And we lost Sean Gannon, a 32-year-old Yarmouth police officer, handsome, wonderful, married, from New Bedford, like me, you know, a friend, a brother in blue, shot and killed. And I saw the look in the eyes of the officers that saw that. And we negotiated with the killer, who finally came out. And then I saw the team go in to rescue Nero, who had been trapped, shot in the head, trapped in the house for 3 hours with that murderer. And then I saw this sight I'll never forget, where one of our officers, Peter McCollin, grabbed Nero and holding him in his arms, and he's bleeding to death right in front of us. And all the EMTs, all the paramedics, all the ambulance were not allowed to use their skills. It's against the law in Massachusetts. So they put Nero in the back of a police car, and they did the best they could to keep him alive. And because of who Nero is and great medical care, I was there when Nero walked out of the hospital 6 days later, skinny as a rail. He hadn't eaten, covered in stitches from just under his eye to his chest. And we had Sean's cruiser brought to the scene because we were going to bring Nero home in Sean's cruiser. And I was standing there when Nero came out, and he was just staring and looking for Sean. And we opened the back door, and Nero jumped up, and he kept looking for Sean, and he started licking the back seat of Sean's cruiser seat. So I saw that. I lived that. Retired and ran for office on a mission to never let this happen again, and grateful to everyone that supported me, and we won, and I'm a rookie representative and helped file the bill. And today it's official, today, Monday, as we talk, the House and Senate approved it. And now it'll go to Governor Baker. And you know, I happen to live it, but this is an incredible team effort. I've learned how, you know, laws become laws. There's thousands of bills. Everybody has a good idea or a mission. But on this one, you know, Speaker Mariano, Leader Jones, you know, good people that I got to meet, Chairman of the House Ways and Means, Chairman Gonzalez from Springfield on Public Safety. These are, you know, men I've never met until this position. And, you know, people from Pittsfield to Plymouth to Provincetown, everybody came together and supported this bill. And you helped, everybody talking on the radio, calling their reps, calling their senators. But this was huge. So today, I'm proud, but also it's always bittersweet because it brings up, you know, one of the worst days in anyone's life.
When do we expect the governor to sign this?
He has 10 days. Governor Baker is a friend. You know, he has a big heart. And he knows this. He was there. He was at Sean's funeral. And he keeps Sean Gannon's card in his pocket. And, you know, I'm proud to, you know, serve with him as an elected official. But it's bigger than that. You know, he's a compassionate man. He talks to Sean's parents, Denise and Patrick, and Sean's, you know, beautiful wife, Dara. So I, you know, we all look forward to him, you know, signing it. And, you know, we have a vision of everybody being in the same room and Nero being there too. So sometime, hopefully in the next 10 days, there'll be news on where and when.
So I believe that you're already setting your sights on a new mission, and that's in the form of Governor Baker's dangerousness legislation. And we've had State Rep. Allison Sullivan, who's a big proponent of this. What is it about this particular bill that representatives are mobilizing to tackle and make sure that this is a law that's on the books eventually?
Great question. I'm glad you brought it up. Allison Sullivan's another great person, you know, an elected official, a friend, a survivor of violence. And for me, it's my next mission, like you said, to work with others, just like we did. You know, you reach across the aisle, you stick to the mission. And you know, as elected officials, we need to keep our people safe. So passing the law that keeps our police dogs safe forever, from now on. There's over 200 dogs working right now in Massachusetts, and they need to know that we'll be there. They're our best friends, and we'll take care of them. Well, we also need to take care of the public. And the governor's bill that Allison and Rep. Tim Whalen and Rep. Moratori and, you know, Kathy Lenatra, all kind of from your area on the South Shore, everybody should come together, and they do, because we have to keep our people safe. And my personal connection is I've seen it. I've seen people murdered myself. I've seen it. I've investigated it as a detective. I remember meeting with a woman in the hospital, at Cape Cod Hospital. She was beaten so badly that after 30 minutes of me talking with her to find out what happened, I asked her her name, and she said, "Oh, my God, Steve, don't you know who I am?" And she's told me her name, and it was one of my friends, but I couldn't recognize her. She had been beaten so badly. So we need to stand up for our people, especially women and children, domestic violence, sexual assault. There's a lot of laws on the books already. Our brave police officers enforce them. It's up to the judges and you know, the rest of the system to do their job. But this bill kind of closes the loopholes. There's a lot of dangerous people that shouldn't be out, in my opinion. The murderer of Sean Gannon never should have been out. He should have been in prison. We all want people's rights protected. That's part of a police officer's job, is protect your civil rights. And it's also part of their job to take away your rights when you break the law, like this man had done 125 times. But he was out on the street. So this bill because of my firsthand experience, because of people like Allison Sullivan living it, Rep. Tim Whalen, another one, a police officer, we see it, we know it, and the average citizen doesn't always know how things work. But this bill closes some of those loopholes. If you're dangerous, you have a record of violence, the probation officer who's going to determine, the person that, at night at the police station, that person that's the bail commissioner, they need to be able to use that violent record when they determine whether or not to let this person out. Someone that's violent and out on the street wearing a ankle bracelet and has a restraining order that tells them to stay away from someone that they just beat to a pulp, you know, that person lives in fear that victim, that survivor has to live in fear that that piece of paper and that ankle bracelet's going to protect them. And this bill makes cutting off that ankle bracelet a felony. You go to prison if you're out and you cut that thing off, because that's what they do. So it's really designed to close the loopholes on violent criminals, not your average person that makes a mistake, but people that are violent. I believe victims come first, not them. And that's my next mission.
Do you feel this is going to be, this will be something that will be accepted in the House? Do you feel that there's going to be some kind of a divide over whether or not there should be sweeping changes when it comes to dangerousness and what particular offenses will be eligible for dangerousness hearings?
Yeah, great question. I think once the elected officials see it and learn about it, mm-hmm. and it's our job to advocate for it, and I know I'll bring real people, survivors of violence, to tell their story. Everybody has a heart. It really shouldn't be political. It's just keeping us all safe. That's what we all want. We just want it done right. But, sexual assault, domestic violence, right, that happens every day. Every day in Massachusetts, somebody is being abused by someone that they know, right? Domestic relationships is someone that you love or you're dating or a family member. And we've done a lot to strengthen those laws where, we stand up for our victims. But there's loopholes. So if you commit, let's say, sexual assault or domestic violence or both, you should be considered dangerous and they should look at you differently, following all the rules. But should that person be out on the street? Should someone that beat someone so badly that you can't recognize the person that you know, should that person be on the street?
I'd say no.
And the person that was beaten has to, sleep with one eye open or move out of their house because they're not sure if that abuser will come after them again. And I've lived it as a police officer. There's personal connections. And sometimes that's what matters, Kevin, to your point. We've lived this as police officers or as survivors of violence. So when we tell the story, it connects with someone who may not. That's not their world. And when people hear it, they should support it. And I know it's not easy. You're making laws. You're closing loopholes. We have to make sure people are treated fairly. But this is important. And this is what keeps us safer. There's a lot of bills and pending bills that sound like they're important, and they can be, but you got to do this first. And it's Governor Baker's bill, and I've read every word, and I believe in it, and we're going to do everything we can to bipartisanly make it happen.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with State Representative Stephen Xaros from the 5th Barnstable District. He is our guest. Probably the final question I would ask you is, the governor released his final budget the FY23 budget. House will get their chance to put their version forth. Between the two, any thoughts, especially when it comes to your district?
Yes. You know, we're the fifth Barnstable district, which is half of Barnstable, where I live, all of Sandwich, parts of Bourne, and even a part in Plymouth. And I love it. And we call us the fighting fifth. You know, we're going to fight for what's right. This affects my district, but really all of ours. You know, it's $48.5 billion with a B dollars. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very similar in numbers to last year. But I think what's important is hitting some of the big, big issues that I hear all the time in my district. You know, school funding. People need to learn trades, like going to, let's say, a regional technical school so you can get into the workforce with a high-demand trade. Child care, the cost of child care, so someone can take care of your child while you go to work. And that person that takes care of your child should be paid well. Behavioral health, we hear that all the time, and I've seen it as a police officer. People that struggle with behavioral health and addiction. Sometimes it's separate. A lot of times it's codependency, both. We need to do better. So there's money in the budget to attack the behavioral health issues, addiction, workforce training. I hear it everywhere I go. People think there's not enough people that want to work. There is. There should be. But there's just not enough people. The baby boomer generation has aged out. COVID has affected that too. So training our workforce is huge. And we talked about it already. There's millions of dollars to help sexual assault and domestic violence victims. And not only victims, or I call them survivors, but preventing it. And then, you know, a couple other ones that come up in my district, in your district, is, you know, housing. Housing is huge. Home ownership. Taking care of our veterans, you know, that's special to me. I'm a grandson of a veteran, son of a veteran, and father of one that never came home. So those are some of the things I picked up in the budget. But, of course, we'll have to read them all over and make sure it's all appropriate. There's a lot to it. That's part of being a good legislator, is reading and learning. But those key issues of housing, workforce training, education, child care, and public safety, that's what I'm focusing on.
He is State Representative Steve Exaros. He's been our guest. Representative, thank you again for joining us this evening.
It's my pleasure and my honor, and thank you guys. Thank you, Kevin, and everybody in the office and out there. Please reach out anytime. God bless and be safe.
You got it. We're going to step aside. That does it for hour number one. But guess what? Hour number two on deck. Stay tuned.
WATD FM Marshfield. WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shores Radio Station. 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
If you want to drink, that's your business. If you want to stop, that's for Alcoholics Anonymous.
AA is an inclusive fellowship of individuals all around the world. The one thing you need to ask yourself is, am I ready to do something about my drinking problem? For more information, literature, and videos about Alcoholics Anonymous, go to AA.org. To find a meeting near you, call 617-426-9444 or visit aaboston.org.
Hi, my name is Pam Denholm, and I'm with Weymouth Food Pantry. Our mission is to help neighbors who are experiencing food insecurity, and we do this not only during the holidays, but all year round. We serve Weymouth from our warehouse, which is located in Rockland. To get involved, to make a donation, or help make a difference, please visit our website at weymouthfoodpantry.org. Thank you, and please continue to support the amazing nonprofit organizations doing good work on the South Shore.
download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, we are back. You know what's funny is traditionally that music signifies that a very special guest will be joining us, as back in the day during the Hedlund years. And I believe that he should be on the line right now. Dave Wedge, are you there?
Sir, how are you?
How are you?
I am wonderful. I am sorry for the noise. I'm walking to my car. It should be quieter soon. How's things?
Things are good. I know it's, you know, you're not talking to folks in France, but it's definitely good to be talking with Dave Wedge, who is the author, best-selling author, who co-wrote 12, the inside story of Tom Brady's fight for redemption. But that's not all we have here assembled. We also have Cosmo Massaro. Cosmo, a media consultant with 7 Letter and the co-host of OA On Air. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
He's got many other titles, but we'll just keep it brief, just like that. Music connoisseur and...
Hold on. I've been sandbagged. I didn't know Cosmo was there.
And a friend of Dave Wedge. I guess you don't read my Facebook feed. I think I even tagged him.
I thought he liked it, didn't he?
Sandbagged.
No sandbagging here.
Sandbagged.
And Jared Valenzuela, Plymouth County Commissioner. Also, he is the host of the JV team, heard every Wednesday night from 6:15 to 7 o'clock. Now, the reason why I chose each one of you to be a part of this... See, last week we actually did a segment pontificating as to whether or not Tom was going to actually retire. Well, guess what? He did. Right after the show.
It was a hard day.
It was a hard day.
It's a hard few days.
Now, Jared, I penciled Jared in as the unapologetic Brady fan.
Oh, you bet.
He currently has every jersey that Brady has worn except for two.
Correct.
He will pay a high reward for the other two if you do have them.
If anybody has a white AFL throwback or the silver jerseys they wore from like 03 to 05, I'm your guy. I'll take them. That'll complete the collection.
He's wearing the Buccaneers jersey right now, and he looks very sharp and handsome.
Thank you. Anti-TB12 method, TB12.
Okay. Now, Cosmo had an interesting take on Brady's retirement announcement, and so I thought he would make an interesting guest to be a part of this. And I've been trying to get Cosmo on for a while, and this is just a perfect reason. The dream is to have Dave and Cosmo in studio to talk music. That would be a hell of a segment, don't you?
I wish we can set that up. It's just, tonight, not a good night. Sorry about that. But, I got to say, these Pats fans who, like, $5 jerseys and, like, followed Brady and, like, rooted for Brady. When
season ticket holder. I bought season tickets.
I have a real problem with that. I really do. Like, if you're a Pats fan, you're a Pats fan. Like, right. You're not a Brady fan. You're a Pats fan, like, and if you're a Brady fan, like, you're not a Patriots fan. Simple as that. So, like, Jared, honestly, like, I got a real problem, dude.
Well, I'll sweeten it for you. I actually bought season tickets, Dave, and
to the Bucs,
to the Buccaneers.
The second person I know.
Yeah,
I
got the saddest voicemail. I got the saddest voicemail from the account rep Wednesday. Hi, we're just calling from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to see if you're having any issues with your renewal. Yeah, I have one big issue. It's called Tom Brady, and he's not there anymore.
Yes.
I'm just going to disagree. So I'm generally with you. I root for the teams. I root for the laundry. I went to Brady's return game at Foxborough. I rooted for the Patriots. When Brady got sacked, I kind of golf clapped. It just felt really strange to root against him. So I really kind of didn't. I just mostly observed that game. But for what Tom Brady did for the Patriots, that's the one exception to that rule I'll ever make. And I don't think there'll ever be another player on any one of our four teams to come anywhere near close to what Tom Brady did for the Patriots, and therefore that was the exception to the rule. And I'm personally glad I did. I got to enjoy two more years of greatness.
So I want to finish my introductions.
We're already at it. I love it.
They're already at it. Dave, of course.
He leaned in.
Dave, of course.
No problem. Totally respect it, Jared, but disagree 100%.
Like, okay, love it.
You can totally, like, appreciate the greatness, but you don't have to follow it and, like, chase it like a little kid.
Fire the cannons.
Well, my view on that is, after, look, I've been a Patriots fan since I was a kid. That's a long time, right? That's about 50 years.
Easy.
So that means I've experienced, like a lot of people, like you guys.
The Rod Rust years.
A lot of loss.
And before, it's some ups and downs.
Dick McPherson.
But after 20 years of absolutely remarkable performance, not just by Brady, but by really two dynasties, because there's two right. separate dynasties. The first half and the second half of the Brady-Belichick dynasty. If after all that winning, if that's not enough, you need another one, that you had to sort of follow him to Tampa Bay. I'm not cracking on you, but I don't get why can't we compartmentalize, right? It's like every player that comes and leaves the Patriots, even Darrelle Revis, that moment is magic. Randy Moss, that moment has its own magic,
it
right?
Does.
And why can't we just enjoy that, compartmentalize, and then okay, now we're in a new era, and guess what? Tom Brady's on the other team. That means he's the enemy.
So how did you each individually, Dave? We'll start with you. When Tom announced finally, because there was speculation over the weekend, last mm-hmm. weekend. How did you feel when he finally put out the 9-page Instagram post saying that that's it, he's done. He can't give 100% to the game, mentally, physically, that he has to do something else. How did you take it?
Well, I expected that's how it would go. You know, it would be like on his terms as usual. And I was sad, frankly, because I did think he would actually play another year because he's Tom Brady and you know, he said he played at least 45, and he literally was one of the top five quarterbacks in the NFL this past year, and he's only 40, you know, well, only, but he's 44 years old. So, like, I think he had a fantastic year. He was a game away from the AFC Championship game. His standard of excellence is right where it's always been. He's right there, like one or two more pieces, and he's right back in the show and maybe even winning the title. So I was a little surprised. I felt sad. But at the same time, I was like, you know what? This guy's like really, you know, he's really, really done it all. He's been true to his family, true to his kids, true to himself, true to his teammates. You know, I tip my hat to him. And at the end of the day, like, there's no way anyone can ever look at Tom Brady and be like, oh, he didn't leave it all on the field or he left early or he, you know, didn't, you know, or he played too long. Like, he really kind of did it, like, just about right. Like, you really can't complain either way. And that, so I have a lot of respect for the guy. I do. And I'm sad I won't be able to watch him play anymore, but, you know, I think there's a lot of young talent in the league, and, you know, we'll have a lot of fun with them. But, you know, like Cosmo said, we're never, ever going to see this level of excellence, certainly in New England, but probably in the NFL or in the sport ever again. You know, he's Michael Jordan, he's Muhammad Ali,
Gretzky,
he's Bill Russell. It's those four, in my opinion, those are the four. And I actually put Brady at the top. I put Brady number one, Russell number two, Muhammad Ali number three, and then Jordan number four, because Brady played in an era where it was murder. Like, you were, like, these guys, like, have 3 years and then they're out. They're out there to kill you, and then they're done. And this guy did it for 22 years, you know, unparalleled excellence. So hats off to him. Good luck.
Well, just two quick notes. They're out there to kill you unless it's the Pro Bowl. And also, Brady might end up picking up a piece of hardware this Thursday.
Good.
The MVP.
Sure.
I think he's going to be a part of that. Cosmo, your take.
I mean, I was a journalist for many years. I've been a PR person for many years. I couldn't help looking at the kind of messy way this all happened. Because don't forget, there was that leak, and then he sends his father out to sort of clean up the mess. And everyone knows the story's true. Adam Schefter doesn't get stories wrong like that. And that was kind of a mess. And then I was among those who were like, oh my goodness, you didn't even mention New England. This is unbelievable. And it was kind of a mess. But you know what? I get over that in about 24 hours for the same reason I just mentioned a moment ago. You can't erase 20 years of the greatest football experience a fan base can have. So yeah, the way he ignored New England in that announcement sort of bothered me. I had an opportunity to spend a good 45 minutes talking to Seth Wickersham, another, like Dave, best-selling author.
Recent podcast.
On Patriots book, exactly.
Yep.
ESPN. Spent a lot of time interviewing Brady over the years. And he says, hey, look, whatever the reasons are, this was not a mistake. Tom Brady said, this is how I'm going to do this.
Calculated.
And that's how he did it. Calculated. And I think we'll find out eventually what the backstory is. Do I think for a moment that when he is, goes into Canton, and he will, of course, on the first ballot, that that stage won't be filled with Patriots brass? It will be. They showed up, and I was there. Bill Belichick and Bob Kraft showed up for Randy Moss just because they respected that one plus season mm-hmm. so much. It's going to be a big Patriots love fest when this guy's when this guy goes into the Hall of Fame, and I hope to be there myself. So, absolutely.
What do you speculate, Jared, why he walked away?
Well, I'll just echo Cosmo. Wikipedia already updated his picture back to him in a Patriots uniform. So much like Montana with the Chiefs, United.
So you're saying the one-day signing is impossible?
No, that's not going to happen.
Okay.
There's no way that'll happen.
Really?
Yeah, no way.
Why?
I don't think he owes New England anything. I think if you wanted, look, he asked three straight years for contracts, 17, 18, and 19. And if Kraft wanted him to retire a Patriot, then Kraft should have made an offer. I think his nose is out of joint with one very, very specific person, that's Robert Kraft. If you notice, and I agree, the retirement announcement was clunky. I saw it coming. Schefter, Cosmo, to your point, Monday doubled down on it. Even after, he's like, oh, no. He is retiring. He doubled down. But then Brady, Monday night, well, I'm still going through the process. And then Tuesday morning at 10 a.m., I guess, 14 hours was enough time to process it.
Yep.
And I talked about this on my program. I don't like the way things are now. 20 years ago, if he was retiring, he shows up at the stadium. The camera's going, the lights are going, the press is there, you're asking questions. And, of course, you're going to get a lot of questions about New England. I think he left out New England because he said goodbye to us 2 years ago. That was his goodbye out the door.
You don't think there was a leak from the Patriots that someone on the inside knew and leaked it?
I was going down that rabbit hole. I think ultimately he's upset with Kraft. I think Brady always knew, and he would have been silly not to, that Bill Belichick was going to move on from him at some point, because that's what Belichick does. Yeah. And I think Brady always hedged his bets by, Lawyer Malloy.
And all the greats that they've cut
right.
free.
And Brady knew Belichick would do that. So that was not unexpected out of Belichick. But he didn't expect it out of Kraft. And when Kraft was kind of like, nope, go off, do your free agency thing. Notice that the video he posted Thursday featured Belichick in it, mostly featured the Patriots, featured a picture of Brady's mother with the Super Bowl ring that Kraft gave her after she beat cancer. Yeah. No Krafts, no Robert, no Jonathan, nothing. Just Belichick and just the players. I think the bottom line is this, and there's a few other things to consider. Being a temporary Buccaneers fan for the last 2 years, they have salary cap issues. They have a boatload of free agents coming up this fall that Brady,
Gabbert.
Right. I think Brady calculated. They went all in this year. They returned all 22 Super Bowl starters. They went all in this year on winning, repeating, and then he would ride off into the sunset. I think, to some degree, he knew this was it. Was I surprised? Did I like the way it went? No, it felt clunky. Like, I'm sitting in the middle of a blizzard. And you got to remember, I'm 33 years old, so he came into this league when I was 11. I mean, I still have the Madden game when it was any QB 12 in 2000. So, this is like two-thirds of my life, from middle school to being a professional homeowner, a professional adult and a homeowner. So it's like, for me, it was just such a huge, and knowing the history of the game, and as much as I love history, just putting it into that perspective. But that said, I wasn't surprised. I wish it went better. It's like, you got hit with the bomb Saturday, and then it's like, he's denying it. So you're like, oh, maybe there's a chance. Then he hits it on Tuesday. And I will admit, I was a little like, maybe could have mentioned the Patriots. I got over that quickly because, again, he's not our player anymore. If you wanted him to retire a Patriot, you should have given him. I've always said this. The second they beat the Falcons, he said he wanted to play till 45, which I guess was a lie because he didn't want the farewell tour. But look, you should have given him a 5-year deal when they beat the Falcons. That would have, and then you would have looked at him and said, in year two, we're drafting you back up. Like, we're doing a Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers thing in year two.
His name's Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, that was too soon. I mean, who knew?
I think the one-day contract thing is overblown. It's kind of a sham.
It really is.
I don't need that at all.
Right.
And you know what? You're right. He doesn't owe that to anyone. But by the same token, if I'm saying fans, should quickly get over this little snub, I'm pretty sure he's going to get over all this too, because there's a lot of love coming his way for his career, and people want to enjoy that for the rest of their time in history as Patriots fans, and I think we all will.
Yeah, Dave. Yeah. Just real quick, just, Dave.
So, like, you know, Jared mentions the video, okay? So the only problem with that theory is that Brady has no problem with Kraft. None. Zero. They've mended fences. He and Belichick hate each other. Make no mistake about it. There is no love lost there. Belichick is the one that threw him under the bus. Belichick is the one that drove him out of town. Belichick is the one that tried to trade him to the 49ers instead of Jimmy Garoppolo. Wanted to trade Tom Brady. And that didn't happen. So the truth of this matter is, we write about this in our book, the bestseller 12, Tom Brady's Fight for Redemption. Find it on Amazon, buy it now. It's on sale. You can learn everything about it.
Plug.
But the truth is this, that Belichick was done with Tom Brady, wanted him out. Kraft was the one that said, let's have him stay here and retire as a Patriot. But Belichick didn't let it happen. So let's make no mistake about it. That's what happened. This isn't like a Bob Kraft, Tom Brady thing. It's a Belichick.
Yeah, thing. I don't disagree. But I think Brady always expected that out of Belichick. And I think he got a little hurt when Kraft finally caved to Belichick in a lot of ways. And I agree with you. I mean, there's no love lost. Brady got bigger than the team. And I think that's something that Belichick has ever liked.
Didn't cave to Belichick at all. That's the point you're missing. Like, he didn't cave at all. Belichick tried to trade Tom Brady to the 49ers. Kraft shot it down.
Right.
So what did Belichick do? Belichick sabotaged the team is really what he did.
Yeah.
That's what he did.
Yeah, I don't disagree. But I think Brady always thought Kraft would not let that happen.
What's that?
I just always said believe that Kraft, I think Brady deep down thought Kraft wouldn't have allowed that to have gotten to that point. That's all.
Well, no, I think at the end of the day, Belichick ran the team, and that's what happened. He puts the pawns on the board, and he put Brady in there, and you know that's what happened. So, you look at the Malcolm Butler thing. You have to ask questions about.
Right.
You have to ask questions, and that question has never been answered. Why didn't he play Malcolm Butler? Why didn't he do that? But then you look at 2018 when Brady won that like slippery, crazy, wild, random Super Bowl out of nowhere. That was a defensive Super Bowl, and Brady just happened to be there. But that could have easily been, you know, whoever. It could have been Garoppolo, could have been Matt Castle, could have been anyone, but it was Brady. So, Brady is the X factor. Like, Brady is the reason why they won all the titles, and I think Belichick knows that. And I think as time goes on, you'll see that, like, I think they all know that without Brady, they don't win anything. But I think that anyone to portray that there was a beef between Kraft and Brady is wrong, but there was definitely a beef between Belichick and Brady. That happened.
And you were able to find that out when you wrote about the Deflategate and Tom trying to rebound from that and save his legacy, right?
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, not only that, but, you know, like I said, he tried to trade him. Like that, you know, and there's a lot of things, you know, we write about in the book where, you know, Brady was tired of being berated in the film room by Belichick. He was walking in there on a Monday and a Tuesday morning or whatever they had film, and he's walking in there as a guy who's got 5-6 rings on his fingers, and Bill Belichick screaming at him and making a mockery of him and pointing to him to the entire, you know, 53-man roster saying, look at Tom, look at that pass he missed. Hold on, let's rewind it. Look at that. That's pathetic, man. And just making an example of him. And Brady understood why he did it. We all understand why he did it. To show everyone no one is above the team. But Brady eventually got tired of it. And we got that from people very close to Brady. I can't say who, but really, really, really close to Brady. They were like, you know what? He was sick and tired of winning rings and bringing that team money, taking less money, taking the hometown discount, and getting his ass kicked in the film room, getting his ass kicked on the playing field at practice. And Belichick just kind of took that and he used that to propel the rest of the team. And he understood why he did it, but eventually he got sick of it. And I think ultimately what really happened, guys, is he went to Tampa and he saw how a star is supposed to be treated. He went to Tampa, and he saw, wow, I'm a king. I can do no wrong. They're going to pay my total salary and then some.
Big poster him on the side of the stadium when you walk in.
They're going to give my family, you know, carte blanche. They're going to give me cars, whatever I want. The Patriots weren't going to do that. He got the hometown discount the entire time he was here, and he saw when he left what he was really worth. So I think people have to kind of think about that. Like, it's not a bad thing you know, he had a great run here, but eventually Tom Brady realized his worth after he was gone.
But here's my question. Why he won the Super Bowl last year, why didn't he do like his friend Peyton Manning did and walk away? I mean, his wife's berating him, saying, all right, what more do you need to do? What more?
I think he legitimately, you know, looked at the team, looked at the league, and said, you know what? We can repeat. And I think that was a legitimate...
Especially when Breeze retired, too.
I think it was a legitimate gamble, right? So you don't go out completely on top, but he certainly doesn't go out with his tail between his legs.
Is that a bomb, right?
I think he rolled the dice on, hey, you know what? Maybe we can really do this.
Right.
And I think retiring now is a smart move, because there's really no... There's no picture of Tom Brady out on the field when he probably shouldn't be out on the field.
Right, there isn't.
He'd be the first kind of player to say, you know what? It's not just making a roster. It's not just being able to help the team in some way. If I can't lead the team and be the only guy you want out there, I shouldn't be out there. And I think so many people in sports don't know when to quit. And this guy knows when
Peyton
to quit.
Manning didn't.
And I think that's another piece of his legacy of excellence. He knows how to quit and when to quit. Not quit, but he knew when it was the right time, you know?
He's still with some gas left in the tank.
I would compare him to Marvin Hagler in that respect, where he lost a big game and one that he probably could have won or maybe even should have won.
Sure.
But he walked away at the end and was like, you know what? I'm at the top of my game. No one's beating me. My team kind of beat themselves. That's what happened with Hagler. Hagler got beat by Vegas. He didn't get beat by Sugar Ray Leonard.
Right.
He got beat by the game, and he walked away and never played again. So I kind of respect that. I always wished he came back and played more. Obviously, Tom Brady had a longer career. You know, he played a couple years after I thought he would have. I thought he would have retired after that 2018 Super Bowl and never played again, which wouldn't have been a bad thing. But he did. He won that great Super Bowl with the Bucs last year. And I think Cosmo's right. This year, All the pieces were there for him to win again.
Sure.
And they certainly could have won again.
They just covered Cooper Kupp.
That's why he played the game. She lost the game.
Yeah.
And he said, you know what? I don't have another year of training in me. That's what I think it came down to. He's like, I don't have another year of putting my body through this torture. Because make no mistake, like, Tom Brady doesn't go into a season half-assed.
Right.
He doesn't just... And that's where I differ about Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning walks in there with his skills and his giant head.
Right.
And noodle arm. Yeah,
he doesn't walk in there with like his legs in shape, with weight strapped to his leg, walking around the neighborhood, like doing the flexibility. Like Tom Brady puts it all out there and goes 100%. There's not a lot of players, never mind quarterbacks, that have ever trained the way he trains.
Just a couple more minutes left here as we have Dave Wedge, Cosmo Massaro, and Jared Valenzuela talking about Tom Brady saying goodbye. So now, what does Tom do? Does he walk away from the game? What happens, Jared?
Well, he's got the Brady brand athleisure line. If you want to spend $100 on sweatpants, you can knock yourself out. He's got the TB12 method, and he's got
that's his wife.
Right. He's got the production company, branding. And I think, you know, to echo what Dave just said, too, you know, into what Cosmo was saying, I think one of the most valuable lessons Brady clearly learned from Belichick is it's better to be a year early than a year late on players. And even Brady has said that about himself. I don't think he wanted the farewell tour. I think certainly a part of him probably realized, especially with Breeze out of the equation, I'm going to pass Breeze's passing records. I will literally cement myself at the top of every single solitary record by a quarterback in NFL history. Records that are very unlikely to be touched
for a while.
Yep. And, you know, you look at it, you know, and again, I mean, look, they should have beat the Rams in that game. You know, Bruce Arians is an idiot. I think to some degree, Brady, the last 2 years with Bruce Arians and not Bill Belichick would probably help Brady appreciate what he did have with Belichick. I know he clearly got frustrated at the end, but to not cover Cooper Kupp, to call a blitz with 42 seconds, and LA has no timeouts, what are you doing? I'm not a football expert by any stretch, but drop six in coverage and put two on Kupp and let them get their 10 yards. Who cares? And Kupp was like running towards my seats, and I was just losing it. So I think he was just done. I think he's going to be around. He's going to be in New England. There's going to be a statue someday. You know that. He's going to have his Patriots Hall of Fame induction. And there's just, he's going to be around, and he's going to be around the game. But, you know, I think he looks at it and realizes, I've made all I need to make. The brand is the brand. The brand is set.
And what he's done will really probably not be matched by anybody in sports for a very long time.
I don't know that Brady fits the profile of someone. Certainly football is such a huge part of his life that I can't see him not being part of football in some way going into the
future. I see him being an owner.
Yeah, I can. Well, I see
John Elway.
I see him being an owner. It's tough to see him being a coach because he hasn't really been much of a mentor.
Right.
If he was, I'd make one of those prop bets that he would coach Michigan someday.
Ooh.
Right? That he would coach Michigan, but he has never really been the mentor type to the players around him, and at least as far as the other quarterbacks. I just don't know that he's the coaching type. But yeah, I see him being part of an ownership group in some way. In the same way that, you know, I think John Elway, in addition to being an executive, has a piece of the Denver Broncos.
John Lynch.
So yeah.
I don't see Brady going down that road of coaching college. I mean, he's never, you know, he's way beyond that. Like he's like a Pats owner, Bucks owner, or like he's Senate, Congress, Vice President. Like he's going for the long ball. Like he's not going somewhere to like mentor young men who have a lot of promise. Like Tom Brady is like a superstar. His wife is one of the most highest paid supermodels in the world. Like, he's not going to go do something just to do something. He's going to like take it to the next level.
Talk radio talked about it this week as to what happens in 5 years. First ballot Hall of Famer, no doubt about it.
Of course.
Are all wounds healed?
Yes.
Who is out there to present Tom? Who speaks of Tom? Is it? Who do you think it's going to be?
Dave? It's got to be Belichick.
Absolutely. You think so?
If it's not Belichick, it's a real slap in the face to the organization and to Brady. Like, it's got to be Belichick. And if it's not, like, I will never come on your show again.
You'll take that
out on Kevin?
Don't threaten the show.
I agree it's going to be Belichick. I just finished Man in the Arena, which was excellent. And for a lot of, you know, to that point about the training you were talking about, Dave and Kevin, you know, Brady mentioned that. I didn't have the skills. I had to really work harder and longer than most. I think a lot of flowery bouquets thrown Belichick's way.
Rudiger.
A lot of respect thrown Belichick's way in the last episode, the penultimate episode, because they have one coming out in March to talk about his time in Tampa Bay, which was what tipped me off that he was retiring. That's why I hopped that flight, went to that playoff game. But the Hall of Fame, it's got to be Belichick. It will be. I think they did heal wounds. You know, they met. A lot of people don't realize they kind of privately met before the Hall of Fame induction last year. I think they sort of mended a little bit. You know, and I think Belichick going over to Brady after the Tampa game was to sort of say, because remember his trainer Guerrero started kind of yipping again. His father kind of started yipping again. And I think Belichick, to some degree, was kind of like, hey, I thought we were all set. Like, I thought we were all settled. And I think they were. And I think they will be. And I agree, Dave. It has to be Belichick or Kraft, but it's got to be Belichick.
Yeah. If there was a statement that he wanted to make, he's made the statement.
Right.
And 5 years from now, I believe absolutely wounds will be healed, and there will be a major showing of love for Tom Brady by the Patriots organization and absolutely the people that have been most important in his life as a Patriot, Coach Belichick, Bill Belichick, the Kraft family, Robert Kraft, and so forth, will absolutely be part of it. There's just no way I can see any scenario other than that. There's too much history. It's the greatest 20-year run of any sports franchise. Yeah. And it's just too big.
I think Tom will hold a grudge, and I think it'll be Tom Sr. who will quote right now.
Okay.
Right now.
That might be the only other
That's
acceptable.
What I think.
My dad swore me in as a county commissioner, so, you know.
I can see it.
Well, I get
gentlemen,
that.
I want to thank you so much for joining me.
Always a pleasure, Kevin. I love Tom Brady. Always have, always will. Don't care what he does.
Who you got coming on your show this week?
This week I have Plymouth County District Attorney Tim Cruz.
Very nice.
6:15 Wednesday.
You want to plug anything, Cosmo?
No, just been great to be on. Hope we can do it again. Love to come back and talk about music. And that's it. You can follow my channel on Newsbreak, the Newsbreak app. I'm also writing for Newsbreak, and there you go. Awesome.
Dave, anything in closing?
No, I like the idea of me and Cosmo coming in talking music, but my new book comes out March 15th, Riding with Evil, on HarperCollins, William Morrow, and I'll come back on and talk about that. But
huge fan of your Lennon book, by the way, Dave. Meant to mention that
you
at the top.
this one I'm super excited about. It's about the only cop to ever infiltrate the Pagans, which are the Hells Angels. Quite a story.
Well, that's that'll wrap it up for this segment. But fear not, we have one more on deck. You're tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATV.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Each year, about one out of two men and one out of three women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard medical faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
Hi, I'm Andrea Pike, Executive Director at Friendship Home. Our mission is to enrich the lives of adults with developmental disabilities and their families. We're located in Norwell, Massachusetts. To get involved or make a donation, please visit friendshiphome.net. Thank you, and please continue to support amazing nonprofit organizations on the South Shore.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We have returned for the final segment of Monday Night Talk. Joining us today is an author. Her name is Ann Jones Vogt. And we're here to talk a little bit about her new book, her new best-selling book, Wake Up and Live, The Ultimate Guide to Self-Discovery. Anne, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And just so folks know, where are you? Where are you? Where do you originate from? Where are you? Where do you live?
I am 20 minutes outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Grew up, born and raised my whole life.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am your everyday girl. I just turned 40. I went through a divorce. I just went through a transformation period with the weight loss journey that I've been on, where I've lost 75 pounds. I work full time. I have two boys that are my world. They're 6 and 9. They're amazing. And with, you know, everything that was kind of going on in my life, that's when I decided to start writing a book about it.
What was it like to initially put together an outline and figure out how you wanted to put the book together? And did you have any guidance at first?
So the crazy thing about that question is I get this question a lot. And truthfully, I started writing the book to myself. I never intended to actually write a book that I was going to publish. Everything that I was reading and looking for inspiration for, you know, said, write down your thoughts. And I just, as I journaled and wrote down my thoughts to myself and read them out loud, was when it turned, you know, when I thought, well, if I can inspire myself this way, then, you know, if I can inspire somebody else, that's worth it. And I took off with my idea, and I reached out to what I thought was like halfway point to a local publishing company here, and I pitched them my idea, and we ran with it. And, you know, here we are. It was from my first entry till the day my book was released, I think took me about 6 months.
So, I mean, prior to wanting to write a self-help book,
Did you ever aspire to be a writer? I mean, sometimes I've had a chance to talk to authors. Maybe they might have written short stories. Maybe they wrote poetry, and then it would blossom from there. Did you have anything like that that you had done and experienced, and that also was an antithesis for it?
Oh, absolutely. I have enjoyed writing and been a storyteller since as far back as I can remember. One of, you know, childhood memories, I've always thought it would be cool to write a book. And even, you know, through my 20s and my adult years, it's something that was always in my head. I've been that friend that's that the deep thinker, the long text messages, you know, so it's something I've always enjoyed and have always wanted to do.
Now, at any point in time, did you have you talk about wanting to write? I mean, do you ever want to be someone who wrote, you know, fiction or, you know, or something that would be a self-help type of book?
There was books that I've like read. The authors that have always inspired me throughout the years were like an autobiography. I love the truth in a story. I kind of love learning more about that person and kind of learning, like, you know, whether it's you pick up on their sense of humor or you pick up, you know, something that inspired you from that person, or you hear, you know, a real raw, honest story. I've always been interested in that. And so I feel in a sense, you know, my writing, my book that I've created is very along those lines.
Talk to us, share a little, just a little bit of a glimpse into the window of some of the changes that the transformation you went through. You talk about weight loss. What else? What other things went along with weight loss? And how have you tried to use that to sustain? Because losing weight is one thing, but keeping it off is another.
100%. So I write about this in my book a lot. And for me, it's staying consistent with yourself. So I learned moderation. I actually learned the term moderation. You know, for so many years, I didn't understand that, you know, and I would make up excuses. Oh, well, you can, you know, do this or eat that, or you could skip that. So staying consistent, learning moderation, truly educating myself on the foods that I was eating, were my biggest winning answers, honestly.
Again, if you are just tuning in, we're speaking with the best-selling author, Ann Jones Vogt, and her book is Wake Up and Live, and she's sharing some details as she went through the process of writing this book. What was it like? I mean, what was it like to at least get a first draft done? Did you go through the process of having a first draft and then having somebody look at it to either say, oh, maybe you should add a little bit more substance, or maybe you might want to pare it down?
Absolutely. So my publisher kind of told me at the beginning, you know, show a little vulnerability. Vulnerability is, you know, I think what connects us to our audiences. It just makes you a real person, which that is what we all are. You know, we are all just real people trying to figure this out. But when I did get my, you know, my first rough draft, and it was actually a really cool moment, you know, opening my computer for the first time and seeing my book formatted in a chapter form and going through and making the final edits. It was a truly awesome feeling.
Any situations I've had, you know, any author that I've talked to, there have been times that they've had to encounter writer's block, or maybe they weren't, you know, they had to get over a hurdle to kind of get past a certain juncture in the writing process. Did you experience that?
I did experience writer's block for a while. Well, not for a while, but at different times throughout my book. One of the best pieces of advice I got from actually my younger brother, he said to me, find your most creative time during the day and then narrow down in on that time. And I just rearranged my focus. That like really helped me, like, okay, I'm creative from these times. And that's when a lot of my ideas would come into place. It's actually on my last chapter when I finish up the book, I kind of start in writer's block form. And but the best way that I kind of came over writer's block was I just started typing.
So you mentioned earlier that some of the book, your favorite books are autobiographies. Is there any that come to mind that you've read and that you still cherish to this day?
I mean, I've always been a fan. Like, you know, I love Chelsea Handler's books. I read, you know, they made me laugh. You know, Kesha, I've read her book. You know, I'm also, You Are a Badass. It's not a, you know, autobiography, but Jen Sincero, I think that's how you say her name. She is an amazing writer. She's so inspiring, and I actually can listen to her books over and over again. I love them.
Now, is that something that you're hoping that your audience will take away from what you have put forth in your book, Wake Up and Live?
Oh, I hope. My hopes in writing this book and publishing this and putting myself out there on this, you know, a platform is in hopes to inspire someone. And it's, you know, it's so amazing. I've had friends and clients and family send me like their favorite lines in the book or their favorite parts in the book or their, you know, something that spoke to them the most. And just hearing that, like in this short week and a half that it's been since released, this positive feedback from how it's positively impacted other people that's a win. It's a win for me.
So you have shared this with the folks closest to you. Any surprises to them, of anything that you were able to put in the book and that caught them by surprise, but that they were happy to at least learn about somebody that they're close to?
So I consider myself honestly being like an open book. I don't think I really caught too many people off, you know, from surprise. But there were some things in there that maybe cleared the air for some questions that people had and were thinking about just different time periods or events in my life that were going on. So it cleared up a little bit of questions. But one of the most things I keep hearing people say is we want more, we want more, we want more of the story. When are you writing a second book? So
I would ask you this, and you know, it's, I think for some people it's tough to, it's okay to say you're an open book, but there's always there's certain information that might go into a reserve that maybe you don't necessarily you're forthcoming about. Did you ever come to any juncture where you're like, on, I don't know if this is anything that I really want to make public, that I want for public knowledge, but you know, maybe there was some information that, you know, you may have reached that barrier, then finally said, you know what, it'll be good to have it in the book.
I know exactly understand what you're saying. I did come to that crossroad, when it came to talking about, you know, my divorce and, some reasons for, you know, leaving my marriage. I chose to keep those out, because I didn't want my book to be about that. And I didn't, you know, I think there are still some, you know, details and things in our life that we, you know, need to keep private. So, you know, I want to stay considerate to, like, you know, the people around me as well. So I'm going to say I feel like I chose my words well.
And being a proud mom, you know, how old are your children? And are you anticipating the day that they pick up the book and read it to find out about how you were able to overcome so much at a certain point in your life?
So my boys are 6 and 9. We have an amazing, awesome, very open relationship with each other and talking and communication. My boys are so proud that, you know, I wrote a book and I see it inspiring them. And yes, they have not read the whole book, but there are parts that we talk about. There are some chapters that I've read to them because they've asked. And no doubt, when my 9-year-old can fully read the whole book, he's going to, whether I like it or not. And so that is also one of my reasons why I stayed very well with my words, is because I do know that if not today, someday my kids will be reading this book.
And again, we're speaking with Ann Jones Vogt, and she is the author of Wake Up and Live, The Ultimate Guide to Self-Discovery. How'd you come up with the title? Where did the title come from? And what was it like? You get the okay that at least the contents, the inside contents, are good to go. What happens in regards to choosing cover art and a title?
So it's crazy you asked me this question, because I love this story. I struggled with a title name. You know, I had all these tentative titles in my head, and a lot of my book is built on beautiful conversations I've had with friends and self-reflection. And I had this conversation one night with my girlfriend, and we were troubleshooting like what the book was going to be called. And, you know, she kind of said to me, like, Annie, like, how are you living your life? She calls me Annie. Nobody else besides my mom and dad. You know, how are you living your life? And it was this aha moment as I was leaving her, driving home that night. And I was like, oh my gosh, wake up and live. Like, this is it. Like, this is perfect. And that was it. And it just came to me. And I texted my publisher as soon as I got home. I think it was at 11 o'clock at night. And he's like, yes, yes, I love it. And, you know, the photos and everything and the shoot that we put together, it just all came together really well. Mike from the Dream Starters, who's my publisher, he has an amazing group of people that work with him in editing. And, you know, I showed them pictures I want. I gave them my vibe that I was on. And honestly, like, they helped me run with it.
What was it like to get your first copy of your book? Because that's a special moment.
It was. So I want to say I probably cried, if I'm answering correctly. You know, hell yeah. I still have it. I'm always going to have my very first copy. I actually signed it to myself. You know, I signed it. This is just in reflection of, like, you did this. Like, you did this. This is amazing. And then in that same package, I also had, you know, two books that I signed for my boys. And that was a super awesome moment that we had, enable them getting off the school bus and, you know, having her sign books for them.
So now what happens in regards to, you know, the book's only been out for what, a couple of weeks?
About a week and a half.
So any plans as far as doing book signings, or does COVID play a role in how much you're able to get out there and share your book and meet with the public?
So that is something I'm learning. COVID is playing a role in that. And so I'm trying to troubleshoot in my head some hurdles to get past that. I would absolutely love to do a book signing. You know, I would love to just, you know, have all, you know, anybody that's supported and, you know, to come and sign for them and share and thank them. I would love that. So I'm searching for some events or, you know, some places that will let me do it around me. But that's a real hurdle.
Now, is there a thought to do, you know, if besides doing the signings, anything you're doing online? Have you considered that and talked with your publisher about how to go about marketing during a pandemic? Has anybody given you any guidance when it comes to that?
I have had some guidance. I'm always searching for more. It is hard. I actually have said this to a few people now, that, you know, writing the book was the easy part, because it was just something that came out so naturally for me. And I just wanted to share my story and inspire others. This, you know, the promotion and getting my name out there is, is the hard part. So I have some things in the works and I'm talking to people and my brain's going and I'm just going to try to keep figuring it out. And like, you know, you giving me this opportunity to speak is amazing. Like I am so blown away and so happy.
Let's talk about social media because that's where I discovered you. And I, mm-hmm. you know, and so, I mean, has that been a helpful tool for you to be able to share your book?
Absolutely. It was really kind of great. You know, I geared my following up to, you know, letting them know like there was something in the works and, you know, we had to be secretive about it until the title, you know, we were able to drop it. But my social media following is amazing. My people are like, I mean, my girls, the guys, like they're so great. They're so positive. And I loved, you know, I love the pictures and like, you know, we bought your book and the reposts and the shares and the tags. And like, I just felt so much love from it. So social media has been a huge help for me.
Talk to me about any outreach from the readers. Have you had any readers who have either reached out to you or maybe they have posted, on Amazon and bought your book and wanted to leave a comment? Have you had any of that?
I've had a lot of that. I've had a lot of that. I've had some personal attacks, which was something, you know, I was told to be prepared for. We're not going to, you know, personal, it is what it is. I'm open to constructive criticism. I believe that's how we learn. So I appreciate a real, true, honest review. And 100%, I've had a lot of people, you know, reach out. Some I know and some I don't. And, you know, I'm making a lot of new connections. It's great.
Do you have anybody who might have been walking in the same shoes that you previously wore as to needing some kind of a direction or some kind of assistance, but didn't know how to take the steps like you did? Have you heard from any moms out there who are going through this?
Yes, all the time, daily. And that is one of the reasons that I think inspired me so much to actually put this all in a book form and let everybody read it. So many mothers and other women just, you know, about fitness and staying consistent and how do you do it? And can I have tips? And, you know, I posted about a month ago when I was officially divorced. I wrote a little thing saying, you know, no one like a true statement about it. And I woke up the next morning with 20 messages in my inbox and they were beautiful messages from men, women, you know, that have gone through it and have struggled. And it's like, they told a little bit of their story and then, you know, and then they encouraged me to give me strength to get through mine. And it was, and it's just been a beautiful thing. It's been great.
So we're coming to the end of our conversation here. We got a couple of minutes left. We are speaking with Ann Jones Vogt and we're talking with her about her book, Wake Up and Live. And I believe it's not only a bestseller. What else is it? You've also been nominated for something else, right?
Number one new release on Amazon.
How's that feel?
Yes. Oh my God, it feels unreal. It feels amazing. You know, it's. I'm proud of myself. I'm proud.
As you should be, because you know it's never easy. As we get older, we're tougher on ourselves. Mm-hmm. Life doesn't come with a handbook. And right. The best way for us to be able to kind of get through is by the assistance of others. And I believe that you're seeing success because others, your message and what you've been through has resonated with others. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. For sure. You know, one of my big messages, I think I spread across my book in so many ways and it's the simplest message is, you know, we just do like you just do it. And, you know, we can fall and we can fail and we can mess up, but it's getting back up because we all are going to do that. And so it's just getting through. So yes, it's been great.
So I know we're you know, you're only going on 2 weeks and having this book out and it being a tremendous success. And you teased it earlier with folks saying, is there more? Well, I mean, are you already considering other projects? Are you considering continuing your legacy as an author and doing an extension to what you've written or something else?
I am. So my goal for, you know, I want to say within the next couple of months is I want to start my own podcast. I think that's going to be one way to continue to reach other people and create the platform. And 100%, I see myself writing another book. It's been so much fun. It's been great. So yes, I see this happening.
So if there's someone who's out there who's considering, maybe they don't want to do a kind of a self-help book like you did, but that they're thinking about, you know, I've always wanted to write a book, regardless of what category it may be. Maybe they might want to write something that's fictional, or, you know, maybe they might want to write a book of poetry. What would you give them for advice in regards to if they want to, in fact, be an author like you?
So that has been, that's came up so many times. The amount of people that have said that they've wanted to do that, that they've inspired to do that. And my advice to them is do it. You know, just do it. My publisher at the Dream Starters, Mike, he is amazing. And I give his name out to everybody and, you know, do it. Whatever book it is, if that's your dream, if that's your want, you know, go for it.
So again, we are speaking with Ann Jones Vogt. Ann, if folks want to find your book, we've kind of teased it's on Amazon. Is it just strictly hard copy, or are there other ways for folks to be able to enjoy your book?
So we have a hard copy. There is a softback, and it's the downloaded Kindle version. The Kindle version is available for a download.
Excellent. Now, are you working on a website, or is there a way for folks to be able to kind of follow what you do? So if you are going to be doing a podcast or writing another book, they can.
Anybody can follow me on AnnJones_vote76 on my Instagram, or AnnVote on Facebook. I am in the process of, you know, trying to create business pages and discussion groups. There's just a lot to do, but yeah, absolutely. You know, find my page, follow me, shoot me a message, say, hey, this is, you know, how I heard. And I would love to hear from anybody. I think it's amazing.
And I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I 100% appreciate this opportunity.
And with that, that is all the time that we have been given. Fear not, though. We will be back next week at 6:15 p.m. Until then, have a great evening and have a fantastic Thanksgiving. You've been tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.